So I don't know if it's pressure that causes you stress, but let me tell you, the average American definitely doesn't address stress as well as we should. I'm one of them. Yes, I have no problem admitting that. 77% of Americans report experiencing stress that impacts their physical health. 73% of adults say stress negatively impacts their mental health. And 43% of Americans struggle with stress-related sleep disorders. And this is the perfect time to talk about stress. Not because you are stressed, maybe. Maybe you're not. And if you're not, you're one of the lucky ones. But because April marks National Stress Awareness Month. Joining us now is Dr. Reshma Jinja, who is a board-certified physician specializing in stress management and behavioral health at Stanford Health. Dr. Jinja, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Melissa. Great to be here.
Well, you don't sound stressed at all. I have to ask that, though. For doctors who work specifically in stress management, do you have to go above and beyond to make sure your stress is low to deal with people's stress?
So, yeah, I'd like to say I sort of practice what I preach. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit about some of the techniques that we can use to maintain a lower stress life.
God, you sound so not stressed. I need to be in your realm. I need to understand how you're talking the way that you talk. This is fantastic. So, you know, all kidding aside, stress is something that I think the majority of Americans to some degree experience. And it's not till we become an adult, I think, that we really acknowledge that stress could be a killer. I mean, talk if you don't mind, Dr. Jinja, first about how we should probably start having the conversation surrounding stress and stress management really when we're kids.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's really important to connect with children, even young children, about how they're feeling, about their emotions, and getting them to sort of express. Of course, it's different with adults and children, but it's important to check in, do these sort of daily check-ins, whether it be an adult or a child, to just see how they're functioning and how they're handling life and the world around them.
What would you say are common signs or even symptoms that, you know, you could be stressed here and there, or there's something coming up, an event that you're stressed about? But chronic stress, I think, is the one that we almost normalize to the point that we don't even recognize we have chronic stress.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'd like to just start by saying, like, not all stress is bad, right? So acute stress actually helps you survive life. It boosts your mental performance, physical performance, in order to accomplish a specific task. But there's always light at the end of the tunnel with acute stress, right? You have the stressful event, and then it's done, and you can relax. Chronic stress, on the other hand, is this chronic elevation of your stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline, which over time wears you down and drains your energy because the perception is there's no end in sight. So you hear this phrase, tired but wired. And what that means is you're in this sort of physical and emotional exhaustion, but mentally you're anticipating some kind of threat or danger. And so that becomes exhausting in and of itself. So the ways that stress can look like, right, physically, we talked about the sleep issues, headaches, muscle tension, digestive issues, decline in immunity. Emotionally, mentally, looks like irritability, being anxious or depressed, low mood, brain fog, difficulty in comprehending or getting through your day, a sense of overwhelm where even like the most minor tasks seem like too much. And then behaviorally, sometimes people socially withdraw. So the lack of in interacting with family and friends in social situations, it could be because of just no time, lack of energy, or even just lack of interest. People adopt different vices to cope with chronic stress, right? So excess caffeine consumption, alcohol, smoking, gaming, gambling, and this overall sense of like restlessness where you're constantly in this fight or flight. And this eventually spills over and starts to affect work performance and even like physical and professional and personal relationships.
It's really interesting, Dr. Jinja, because stress is kind of this silent killer is what it's been referred to as. And it's because it kind of goes unnoticed, or we really, I'm going to say we dismiss it, right? So I remember before I got into radio and I was working in television, I was not sleeping very well. And I realized that stress was a huge reason for that. But then there were all these physical impacts where I realized I was getting sick a lot more often when I never got sick as a kid. I had a great, you know, immunity. Then I realized I was getting sick all the time. And I thought, why is that happening? I realized that I wasn't digesting food as well as I should be. I realized I was retaining water more. I was gaining weight. And I thought, but I'm still working out all the time. I'm still eating healthy. Why isn't it working? And ultimately, realizing that stress was at the core of all of it. I mean, it was unbelievable to me because I thought, well, everybody's stressed. What do you mean? It can't just be that simple. Have we simplified something and kind of written it off as a society? And I think even like doctors recognize it, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the average person, like, do you find patients at Stanford Health who at first will say, really? You're going to tell me it's stress? That's what's causing this, is stress, right? Is that kind of an average reaction you get from people at first?
It is. And you kind of hit the nail on the head, Melissa, when you said we've started to normalize this. You know, our world, life around us is very crazy at times. I mean, we're balancing a lot of different roles, both men and women. Children are exposed to increased levels of stress these days, too, just because of social media and awareness and sometimes just this over information overload and being bombarded. And so we've come to adopt this as being just life. But really, at the end of the day, I think it's so important to recognize the stressors that affect us and our health overall. And it's important to have sort of a release valve on a daily basis to help to reduce these stress hormones and kind of encourage the good and happy hormones to rise in our systems to help balance our lives.
We're talking about stress, not because I want to stress you out more, but actually I want to bring your stress down. I could also use some of this advice. We're chatting with Stanford Health's Dr. Reshma Jinja about this. So I was looking this up, that stress often goes unnoticed or is dismissed as a normal part of life. It's considered to be a silent killer. And what's interesting is even though we write it off, it contributes to an estimated 75 to 90% of all doctor's visits in America. That's according to research in articles that come from, again, from the federal level. It says it is a danger. Long-term, high-pressure environments like your work, finances, caregiving, it can significantly even reduce your life expectancy. So we're not saying if you feel stress all the time that you're cutting your years, but we are saying that you can't keep ignoring it. I don't want people to feel like, oh my gosh, that's it. Melissa wrote my death certificate today. No, I didn't. But I do think we can't write it off. And there's two things that I think we need to really dive into with this, Dr. Jinja. One is how we can effectively manage our stress in daily life. But before we do that, I think we have to clear up misconceptions about the importance of recognizing that you're stressed and not minimalizing it, but also that you are not selfish to prioritize de-stressing.
Absolutely. You know, it just brings to mind something that one of my mentors, when I was a resident, a statement they made about stress and our roles. One is, you can't give from empty pockets. So in order to function and to be there for the other people in our lives and accomplish our jobs and responsibilities, you kind of have to take care of yourself first.
Yeah, it's like putting the mask on you before your kids on an airplane.
Right.
It's funny because that logically makes sense. But the idea of I'm being stretched too thin or I'm not prioritizing my own health, you're not getting the best version of me. And for such a long time, Dr. Jinja, I know I really struggled with this, especially once I had a kid. I really struggled with the idea of, well, no, I can't take time for myself. That's selfish. That's not going to be seen, that I'm dedicated. I'm late, you know, right? So we create in our minds that, my kid could benefit more from a 50% version of me than a 100% version of me. And that's just wild when you say it out loud. But it is kind of that same scenario of, you know, I've got to put a mask on myself if I'm on an airplane before I put my son's mask on. But we don't look at stress that way, which is so interesting. What practical techniques do you suggest to your patients who really need daily stress management?
Yeah, so there's actually a number of them, and this can vary if you even have only 30 seconds in a day versus up to 20 minutes in a day. But, you know, there are a couple of different things. So one, the most common ones actually utilize the body's own reflexes and techniques to regulate. It's also known as biofeedback. They're called like body-based resets. So there's one technique that actually is used by Navy SEALs in times of high stress where they need to just reduce their cortisol levels and kind of get grounded and back in the moment. It's called the physiological sigh. So what that looks like, it's two short inhales through the nose, followed by a long exhale through the mouth. And what that does is it automatically reduces your stress hormones and gets you back into the present. There's something called a cold water splash, where either if you have access to a sink, you can just splash your face with cold water or just put your hand under a tap that has running cold water. And what that does is it triggers your autonomic nervous system, which gets you out of that fight or flight mode. There's another technique called shaking it out, where you just deliberately shake your legs and your arms, and the same thing that actually increases your feel-good hormones and reduces your cortisol levels. And something, if you have a little bit more time, but you can do this in 5 minutes, it's called progressive muscle relaxation. This is a very well-known technique that a lot of therapists use. And basically, it's just clenching tightly large groups of muscles, starting from your head down to your feet, and then progressively relaxing in the reverse order those same muscles. And that deliberate sort of tightening and relaxing also triggers cortisol to come down in your system and elevates your feel-good hormones. There are a couple of other things that you can do, like just exposing your face and eyes to morning sunlight for about 5 to 10 minutes in the morning. That actually resets your melatonin and your sleep-wake cycle, and that also assists your cortisol hormone to be peaking at the right times of day, which is typically during the day and not at night when you're trying to sleep. You could simply take a 10-minute walk after a meal. So there are two phases in the body. One is your fight or flight. That's sort of your high stress level. And then the other one is called rest and digest. So it's really important because we can't exist in both phases at the same time. You're either one or the other. So it's important to kind of make some practices that actually help enhance that rest and digest phase as well. You know, a lot of people don't know, especially when we're working long hours in front of a computer at a desk, that the brain can really focus on average, the adult brain, for about 90 minutes continuously. So it's good about every 90 minutes or so, if we can take like a 5-minute, like a water break, a, you know, bathroom break, even just get up and stretch around your muscles a little bit, just to get the circulation going and give your body and brain a rest. And most people will find that when they get back to the next stretch of work, they're definitely operating with a little bit more mental clarity.
You make a really great point there too, Dr. Jinja, the impact of screens. So because, you know, again, going back to taking care of yourself, self-care, a lot of times people will say, okay, well, I need a half hour alone, for example, parents especially, you know, I need time. And they will go to their rooms or retreat or something, and they'll watch a TV show. And not to say that mindless television doesn't kind of disconnect us from reality. There is a place for that. But I find that when I either am aimlessly scrolling on a screen on social media or I'm watching a show, I actually don't really fill my tank that much. However, if I go and I either meditate or I read a book or I journal or I just take even a 20-minute nap, there's night and day. I don't know if you've seen that where the screens, you know, we think, okay, we're just getting time alone, but the screens don't actually rejuvenate you. Like you might be getting alone time, but that's not actually bringing your stress level down much more. It's just kind of delaying what your body is already kind of going through and you're just by yourself.
Absolutely. That's absolutely correct. I can't tell you how many times, and I think this is probably one of the biggest messages that I try to put forth to my patients when they come in and are just sort of overstimulated. A lot of people struggle with sleep, right? So insomnia is probably one of the most common complaints that we face as physicians from our patients. And so I do a lot of counseling on proper sleep hygiene. And, you know, the screen time limiting is definitely first and foremost there. Like we're connected, whether it's at work or personal lives, organizing things on our phones, pads, tablets, televisions, et cetera. It's really important to recognize that even if you're watching like a romance movie or a comedy show, it's still blue light. And that blue light and screen time is very stimulating on the brain. So there's actually a classic screen-induced insomnia, which is typically people are tired enough that they do fall asleep initially, but then they're up at the wee hours of the morning, like 1 to 4. And when we're awake during those hours are very precious for our body because REM sleep, which is our repair and restore mode, that is supposed to be active in those hours. So oftentimes, if you're getting this interrupted sleep because of the screens, you're not going to be functioning well the next day. Your tank's already half full, right?
Right.
So that's one of the biggest things, you know, limiting caffeine, reducing it to morning hours. A lot of people don't recognize that caffeine actually peaks 6 hours after you consume it. So like if you're having a cup of coffee at 2 in the afternoon, that's peaking at 8. So that's definitely going to impair sleep, right? So that's, you know, these are some of the things that we just kind of adopt as habits, and we're not really aware that we're kind of causing some negative effects in our own health.
Yeah, but that's why we especially want to highlight it during the month of April, National Stress Awareness Month, but things we should be practicing all 365 days a year for sure. Dr. Jinja, I want to thank you so much for what you do at Stanford Health, and thank you for giving us the time here on WACC. We appreciate it.